This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place, whether you're in the mood to say yes to New Orleans, laugh the night away, or immerse yourself in the city's history. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Because of its initials, the city of New Orleans was sometimes referred to as the City of No, N-O. But that's about to change. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell joined with local artist Ursula Rochon to unveil a new logo for the city's fleur-de-lis that makes it the City of Yes. WWNO's Eileen Fleming attended the gallery celebration, marking a new optimistic spirit.
Before she won the mayor's race, LaToya Cantrell spoke with artist Ursula Rochon about infusing the city with an uplifting feeling. The City of No, N-O, that was part of City Hall email addresses, was in need of a refresh. The result was three paintings unveiled at Rochon's Central Business District Gallery called the Rue Maison. Here's the mayor.
We are here really to honor and celebrate the accomplishments of Ursula Rochon and the legacy of the Rochon family in the city of New Orleans since the 1700s. But it demonstrates how our people continue to evolve and to make things great for all. And that is what the City of Yes means. Yes to inclusion, yes to intentionality, yes to equity, yes to growth and prosperity for all of our citizens and residents of the City of New Orleans. And that is the type of culture that we are really being intentional about creating within city government. We know that city government cannot do it all, but when city government embraces all through the spirit of yes, then it sends a message to the communities throughout our city that we are here for prosperity, we're here for growth, we're here for inclusion. We're here to love, no matter who you love. And you know, and so that's what the City of Yes is truly all about. And 31 days on the job, it is what the Cantrell administration and working with all of our city employees, we're trying to not only drive home, but uplift what we say in everything that we do. And as we touch people, touching them with saying, you know what? Yes, you can, and yes, we can together.
You ready?
Yay!
Rochon says the tricentennial celebration this year is a perfect time for optimism. How did this come about? Did LaToya Cantrell approach you, or how did this project come to start?
They actually approached me prior to her being mayor. I know that before there was a point where there was a City of No campaign, and she was very intentional. She said, if I am mayor, I want to make this the City of Yes.
And how did you train? How long did this take you?
2 weeks.
Three paintings in 2 weeks.
Two weeks and two glasses of wine.
And the message is?
The message is positivity. It's about all inclusion for everybody, everywhere, despite differences, that everyone should be able to feel included.
Where will these paintings go?
But it'll be a city building.
Two of the paintings feature a fleur-de-lis with the city skyline. Another includes a fluid keyboard and Mardi Gras Indian costume. The third features a French horn, a tribute to musical prodigy Maxwell Arsenault, a graduate of Holy Cross School and the New Orleans Center for Creative Arts, who closed out the unveiling. In New Orleans, I'm Eileen Fleming for Inside the Arts.
In the French Quarter, Belly Laughs will set the tone as Post Productions presents the 6th annual You Don't Know the Half of It, a live comedy show where actors know half the lines and improvisers make up the rest, boasts original New Orleans content. This performance will be a swan song for its creator, our local queen of comedy, Cécile Montaigne, who joins us now to explain. Cécile, welcome back.
Hi, Diane. What a lovely introduction. Thank you for having me.
So tell us what's happening with you and this improv sketch show.
So you don't know the half of it. Celebrated 6 years in January. And we had a little bit of a prolonged celebration because I had my first child in December. So I was kind of like, yeah, one production at a time. So it'll be a 6 year celebration. And then also the farewell for now show because I am moving to Canada at the end of June.
Wow. Canada, is that where you're from originally?
So my father's Canadian, so I'm half and half. So I'm a dual citizen with Canada and America. So, yeah.
Kind of like the show, half and half.
That's right. Good connection. I hadn't made that one yet. Yeah. Now I leave it up to you which side is improvised and which one is scripted. Yes. Yeah, so we're moving to Toronto.
Well, let's go back in time and talk about the idea for the show. How was that idea born 6 years ago?
So it was an idea that I sat on for a really long time and I kept talking about. And I said, you know, it would just be so fun if we did a show where people had to learn lines and they're all brand new lines. So they can't kind of cheat. So as an actor, you can't be like, well, I know this scene. Or as an improviser, you can't be in the scene with the actor who knows their lines and be like, I think this is from A Streetcar Named Desire, or this is from, you know, The Crucible. So there's a short form improv game called Actor's Worst Nightmare, where you take well-known scripts and you read them and the improviser makes up the other half. And I thought, that's not dangerous enough. It should all be new. So I talked about it forever. And a good friend of mine, Helen Jacks, was like, just do it. I'm just really tired of you talking about it. Can you just do it? And so I was like, you know, I'm going to do it. And then 2 weeks later, we put up the first show at the Elm Theater. And I got four local writers to write a brand new scene. And four actors who were like, yeah, I'll do it. I don't know what it is, but I'll do it. And then four improvisers who showed up. And we did it. And people thought it was so much fun because it is so dangerous. And you're watching these people do this high wire balancing act of, I have these lines, I have to say them. And the improviser's just making up crazy stuff on the other side. And since then, the show has grown substantially. We have a band. We're now at Le Petit, the theater jewel of the community. Yeah. And so that's pretty fun when you have like 200-300 people seeing the show that started with like 50 people watching.
Now, the concept is cool, but did you ever think that it might not work?
Oh, yeah. I was a little terrified before the first show. And so were the actors. They're like, yo, we trust you, but this is weird. We don't know if it's going to work. And I was like, I don't know if it's going to work, but we got to try it. I've had a couple people tell me it's like a rite of passage to do it because it's so scary. You just kind of never know what's going to happen.
And in the 6 years, you've helped a lot of local artists.
Yes. Yeah, so a lot of connections have been made over the years. We've showcased over 200 local artists, which makes me really, really proud and appreciative. So it's great. You know, we often have a huge alumni contingency at every show, kind of cheering people on.
And what will we experience in this show? What are you exploring?
So for the first time ever, we're doing 8 improvisers.
Ooh.
Yeah, so usually we have 4 actors, 4 improvisers, and 4 writers. And for this show, I thought, there's so many improvisers that have been such a big part of the show. I want to give them all a chance to be in our, you know, kind of farewell show.
Can you tell us who the writers are?
So this time we have Kyrie Armstead, John Broder, Mark Laferrette, and Alicia Rooks.
And the improvisers?
John Butts, Mary Ethelyn Gutierrez, Ian Hoke, Chris Kamenstein, Lene LeBlanc, Emily Slazer, Mike Sparrow, and Josh Toops.
Music is from You Don't Know the Band. Introduce us.
So we have Amanda Boren and Andre Boren, Sam Kraft, Alexis Marceau, Stephen McDonald, Mark Parody, and Skylar Stroop.
Now, I don't think we answered the question, what are you exploring? What are the themes of this year's show?
Well, you know, we don't actually ever really have a theme. So our actors, Darcy Fulcher, Kiara Milliner, Michael Scott and James Yergin, they're going to be in scenes that they always kind of end up speaking to each other. I'm like, write whatever you want. But somehow there's always this magic thing where they all kind of land on a theme. And I don't know if it's like the cultural feeling of the moment, but a lot of it is pretty funny. And I want to say some of it's kind of transactional, but like intense transactions and like very high stakes life or death situations. That's one of the requirements. I'm like, it's got to be high stakes, whatever that means to you. Because if it's not important, why is the scene happening? So a lot of it is pretty intense.
Can you give us an example?
I think in the anniversary show last year, we had a scene. It was a person who knew they were dying, so they were shopping for their coffin, which on the surface, that's not funny. one half the scene is the salesman being like, we think you should look at this line. And then the other half was like this person searching for their coffin. So in the one where the woman's searching for her coffin, she's talking about picking out stuff. And a couple lines in, the improviser thinks, oh, we're in a pet store. And he goes, you know what you really need is a ferret. And he hands her this, like, you know, imaginary ferret. And you're like, wait a second. This is supposed to be taking it to a really depressing coffin shop. And then it became this guy just trying to sell her, like, you know, spirit animals that would help her because he figured out that she wasn't well. And it was so funny because that's, on the surface, not a funny scene, but it ended up being pretty hilarious. And then on the other end, for that scene, the guy who's selling the coffins, I didn't tell anyone, but I put two improvisers in that scene. So it starts and the one improviser was searching for a coffin for his wife. And then she showed up and called him out on it and said, oh, you think I'm going to die? And then they had a big fight and they fell back in love. And the actor was like, I don't know what happened. That was crazy. You just kind of put on your seatbelt and let the train leave the station.
So what will happen to the show now?
We are going to decrease down to probably two shows a year. I have a small team of people here who are going to help me set things up, and then I'll fly in and produce the show twice a year is the goal. And then I'm going to bring it to Toronto. So I'd really like to start the You Don't Know the Half of It Canadian franchise. So I got to go up and do my research and find some Canadians who are going to let me put them in this thing up there.
So the show will go on here and in Toronto.
That's the plan. And then we'll take over. No, I don't know. but it would be really great to bring it to a lot of places because it's just kind of a big artistic, fun love fest, I find, where people get together and, you know, there's no rehearsal. You just show up, you have a good time, and then we do it again. So it's been a true honor producing this show in New Orleans and having it become a part of the community. And I'm very thankful that people have been so receptive to it and so excited about it.
You Don't Know the Half of It, creator, producer, actress, and comedian, Cécile Montaigne, thank you for 6 years of laughter, and we wish you and your family all the best on your new journey.
Thank you so much, Diane. I'll keep you posted.
Post Productions presents the live comedy show You Don't Know the Half of It, Monday, June 18th, 7:30 p.m. at Le Petit Theatre. More info is online at lepetittheatre.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A tricentennial exhibit at Tulane's Newcomb Art Museum says happy birthday to New Orleans in a unique way through Tulane's archives. The immersive art installation by Los Angeles-based artist Fallen Fruit is called Empire. Museum curator Laura Blurrow and communications director Miriam Taylor are here. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
So when I think of the word empire, what comes to mind is a government under an emperor or an empress. How does the word relate to this art installation?
This is Laura. I think New Orleans is a very specific empire, right? in relationship to how Louisiana became part of the United States. We really have a lot of wonderful artifacts that are in the collection at Tulane in the form of legal documents signed by people like C.C. Claiborne. We also have portraits and paintings of political figures. The story of empire is also related to culture and how we've kind of colonized the rest of the world with what we do because it's so fun here. So we have a lot of musicians and portraits of them and artifacts of the places where they played music as well in the show. And a really compelling story about women and that story, very unique here in the South too.
This is Miriam. The French, the Spanish, British American, there were just so many different cultures that contributed to New Orleans, the Caribbean as well. And on display, you'll see all of these various stories and just different histories that sometimes are overlooked or sometimes maybe misunderstood.
There's definitely a lot of struggling stories too, right? It hasn't been an easy governance or empire here.
Yeah. How did the idea for the exhibit come about?
Well, the artists were invited to New Orleans actually in part with Pelican Bomb, a local organization that promotes arts criticism. Fallen Fruit is here also, you know, doing a public artwork that has 300 trees planted throughout New Orleans for the tricentennial. So since they were already in New Orleans working on that project for which they received an NEA grant, the artists were invited to investigate the archives of Tulane and to look at the New Orleans tricentennial through that lens. And so they've essentially behaved like curators in some way. And they've created these installations where they've mined 10 different collections across campus. And they used this opportunity while they were in New Orleans anyway to really get to know the city.
Tell us more about the artists behind the art collaboration, Fallen Fruit. Who are they?
Austin Young is originally from Nevada, and David Burns is from Los Angeles, and that's where the two guys are based presently. The artists are also exhibiting internationally. We're really lucky to have them here in New Orleans.
Part of their idea where they get this name Fallen Fruit is they think of fruit as an object that tells the story of a culture without really having any type of narrative with it.
And that begs the question, how do you put all of that into one exhibit?
Well, I guess one of the unifying aspects of the exhibition visually would be the wallpaper. So the artists created a design that's really dazzling, this beautiful wallpaper. They've done three different designs for individual rooms in the show, and that provides a cohesiveness for what is sort of a encyclopedic display of sorts. I mean, it's a kind of a crowdsourced show in some ways, and there are operations of chance sort of at play as well when someone walks through the exhibition. It's so densely packed with objects. We have 400 pieces on display. We have little vitrines with tiny objects like jewelry, Mardi Gras costumes and things as well. So it's really a grab bag in a lot of ways, but the wallpaper has this unifying component that architecturally holds everything together.
Wow. Yeah. They think of it as an immersive installation. So each room has kind of its own theme. And at first, you just want to walk in and be a little bit overwhelmed. And then you take a deeper dive. It definitely merits more than one visit.
Take us on a tour.
We have four different rooms in the space, and the artists have kind of created titles for each of those rooms. One's divided by gender, just as the school historically had been. You have the men's room and the women's room. And then we also have the Empire Room. The first entryway is the Gateway to Cultural Mythology. That's very thoughtful about who's telling the stories of history.
One of those themes in the men's room, you're dealing a lot of traditional ideas of power and how they've played out in New Orleans and at the university. Then while in the women's room, there's this idea of fantasy and myth. It's where the entire wallpaper is covered in carnival illustrations, as well as kind of this idea of public and private persona. We have the personal collection of Josephine Newcomb on display there. And then in the Empire Room, which is the back, it's really interesting. You'll have objects that we would not typically display. So we have some that are damaged from Katrina. They want to show that we have these. So a lot of this is as if you're walking into an archive. They use archival shelving. They've used archival materials and cases. So you're kind of getting a behind-the-scenes look at the way things operate at Tulane and at Newcomb.
It's curious that it doesn't follow a chronological timeline.
You have things from every era.
It's completely nonlinear in its structure, and we have soundtracks in three of the rooms, and it's a bit of chance as to when the audience, you know, walks in and what they see and what their connections are visually and audibly through those things they are experiencing altogether.
And that's an intention by the artist. They like this idea of a kaleidoscope, and they like the idea that part of the artwork is the public's interaction with it.
How are they grouped?
Well, we have some of the objects divided across gender, other pieces that might be more cartoony that are all put together in one room. Like we have reproductions of John Chase's illustrations. He was such an important historian and captured a lot of New Orleans history. So we have illustrations related to that juxtaposed with images of mausoleums and buildings and architectural renderings. So there's kind of this fantasy world that's created, but also it's historically relevant.
And what you'll see is that there aren't labels on the wall, and the artists wanted to do that because they wanted to give equal weight to all the objects. So you might have a portrait of Paul Tulane, but it's next to an unknown artist. And it's really so that people can come in and interpret it how they want to. We have all different types of ephemera. The Louisiana Research Collection has a great ephemera of LGBT history of New Orleans that's next to these great ERA buttons that are all about the Equal Rights Amendments. And so there's all these different tidbits that if you look into one vitrine, you're like, oh, I didn't even know this existed or this happened here. So there's all these little nice moments that happen right. throughout the show.
Yeah, and there's some artifacts that might be grouped along the themes of New Spain and colonization or interpretations of Spanish conquests. It's very much a show that is so deep and complex in its juxtapositions. Like, some of the combinations make sense after you see it and mm-hmm. might at first be a little odd.
How is the issue of slavery addressed?
We actually have a bill of sale from 1788 that's on display and juxtaposed with actually a contemporary document in which an artist is talking about universal rights.
As we look back on 300 years, how does an exhibit like this one prepare us to move forward as a city?
I think it presents a lot of difficult material, actually, and it asks us to look at these primary objects and to make up our own minds about what they mean and the significance. So it's really promoting new research and taking another look at what these objects represent.
Louisiana Research Collection is going back, and if we haven't told the story of a certain group or a certain demographic, it's trying to correct that and go back in. And I think that it merits a city to do that as well.
Museum curator Laura Blero and communications director Miriam Taylor, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having us, Miriam.
Thanks.
Newcomb Art Museum presents Empire, an art installation telling the story of New Orleans through the archives of Tulane. The exhibit will be on view through December 22nd. More info is online at newcombartmuseum.tulane.edu. That's our show for this week. Support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.